join outreach session NCUAC and at large 315 to 445 room 208 BC.
Guys, we will be starting shortly. Let's give it another few minutes. I'm waiting for my co-moderator, and I believe that we don't have like half of our speakers yet. Everyone is at the coffee break, so I hope you will have some patience. Thank you.
Sound check for Verizon call. Sound check for Verizon call.
Hopefully.
Hello?
Yeah, so it's probably turned here.
Do we have two mics or one?
Hand and mic, only one. Yes?
Okay, then I will have to use this beast, won't I?
I will give it to you. Let me know when we should start. We have packed agenda, actually.
We have a packed agenda. Whose phone is this?
Verizon, please confirm you can hear the audio.
I don't know.
Sorry. We're just making sure the bridge.
Yeah.
Ah.
And the camera. Would you like to start or would you like me to start?
We'll put the camera on. Say hello to my little friend.
Say hello to Olivier's mom and grandma.
No.
Yes.
They're not here.
That's why we're saying hello to them.
Okay, we'll be starting soon. We're still waiting. There's a few people coming into the room as we speak, so we'll be starting shortly. And please, could we ask people who are sitting in the back to sort of move over to the table? Because that would be, you know...
Guys, it would be easier for you if you move at the table from your seats. I mean, if you want... There is no obligation, but it would be nicer for you to get closer to us. Goodness me!
That's like the German way, isn't it? Could I just have one small thing? My goodness.
Can I buy 3 minutes? I have to do some non-com outreach. And
this
I
is non-com outreach. This is okay. Well,
when
gladly
would you
take
like
this.
To have your 3 minutes. You can do it now.
No.
But announce that this is non-com outreach while people.
Sandra Hafner.
La Probina.
Hello. Yeah.
What is this?
This is.
While people are gathering still, we have a bit of non-com outreach, so get ready.
Hey, everyone. Hey, Ucha. I'm at the non-com for the second year, and we just found out about the application numbers this year, which looks not very promising. And we are very worried about the sustainability of the ICANN organization. And I truly encourage everyone to apply for a position at ICANN. This can be, let me see, we have 3 seats for the board, 3 years term. We have 2 seats for the at-large community, one for Europe and one for North America. We have 1 seat for the GNSO Council, and we have 1 seat for the CCNSO. So these seats need to be filled.
Sorry, who are these organizations? It's all. Yeah. This is newcomers. We don't have acronyms here, so please each acronym.
Okay. So if you want to have a say in the whole thing, then go to the board. I think board is understandable. If you feel like you are an individual end user and you are coming either from Europe, either from Europe or from North America, then apply for the individual user. If you want to have a say in .info.org.biz, then go to the GNSO Council. That's your constituency. Or if you are somehow have a knowledge about CCTLDs, about the country code top level domains, then apply for the CCNSO. You have to submit a request of application until 19th of March, which is right after this ICANN meeting. And then you have another week to complete the application form. We have especially a lack from people from the Latin American region. So if you are in the room and want to get involved in ICANN, please use that opportunity and apply for it. You will find it here. I leave it with Olivier, as well as the pretzels. So whoever takes one of the pretzels has to take one of those and has to submit a request so that I can say I spent the pretzels wisely. Thank you very much.
Milton, you didn't get the brochure.
We'll sign Milton for the board as a starting point.
So
I like the concept of return on investment here. You know, you invest into the community with pretzels.
I think that we have to share that there are not so many pretzels, so there would be also sharing component in this. So now, without any due delay, let us start. And I believe that Olivier can start.
Okay, well, first, welcome, everyone. Please come in and sit. There's some seats over here and there's some further at the back. And if you see any more chairs on the table, please take those. This is a session where we are going to be giving a sort of informal, more informal type of introduction to our respective communities, the at-large community and the non-commercial users community, which are two component, very important component parts of ICANN. There are a lot of questions around what we do, around how we're structured, around what's the difference between us. And there are also a lot of questions as to how we get involved with the ICANN processes. So we'll have a segment of today's discussion that's going to provide us with details on what we do. And then afterwards, we'll actually be digging into a few of these topics. And we'll be talking politics and policy and administration, and we'll be fighting over each other, or maybe agreeing with each other, who knows. But at least we'll be able to bring you a little bit of an idea and a taste of what it's like to discuss policy here at ICANN. And please take part in those discussions, because we have a few experts that are going to be discussing this. But after that, it's ready for you to also express yourself.
And before I will handle the microphone to the NCUC representative, and I'm going to decrypt NCUC, non-commercial users constituency. And now there is my plea for all the speakers. Remember that there are many people who are newcomers. You're not going to use acronyms, and I'm going to repeat it, you're not going to use acronyms. Whatever acronym you're going to use, you're going to decrypt, because all Olivia has machete, and I have with me, you know, this German soup pasta. So we are going to fine you each acronym $1, and then you're going to buy this pack of pasta from me. So without any due delay, I would like to handle this to Luis Jurel, who will have 3 minutes to tell us what non-commercial users constituency is, what place it has at ICANN, and so on. Luis, the floor is yours.
Okay, that is challenging. Hi, everyone. My name is Louise Marie Urell. I am the European region representative for the executive committee, which is part of the internal structure of the non-commercial users constituency. Okay, yeah, no acronyms. Yes, okay, I got a pretzel for that. Okay, aside from coffee and pretzels, so the non-commercial users constituency is within, so let's start with the structure of it. And I'm not going to take that much long. So the non-commercial users constituency is within the non-commercial stakeholder group. And I'm going to, from zooming in to zooming out, so here's the non-commercial users constituency, and we're within the non-commercial stakeholder group, which also holds NPOC, which is the... okay, I'm going to try...
We have one.
Yeah, one already. I'm going to pay for that. So, and above that, we also have the generic name supporting organization, which holds all of this. And including, aside from the non-commercial side, it also holds the commercial stakeholder group. That might sound a bit overwhelming now, but I can assure you that through time you'll get more used to that. So over at the non-commercial users constituency, we advocate for, as the name already says, non-commercial interests. So that includes end users, that includes individuals, that includes organizations. And over at NCUC, there are certain principles that kind of guide our policy work, that guide our vision and our engagement with policy, especially with regards and narrowly with regards to generic top-level domains. And that includes freedom of expression, that includes privacy. So I think within NCUC, as you're going to see in this session, there are many overlaps, but there are also some particularities of the non-commercial users constituency. And in terms of internal structure of our constituency, we are composed mainly by our bylaws, our operating procedures, and our executive committee. And the non-commercial users constituency is divided mostly between the non-commercial stakeholder constituency chair, which is Renata Aquino. She unfortunately is not here today, but she is joining us remotely, and together with her, there's the executive committee, which has a representative for each region. So I'm the representative for the European region. Bruna is for Latin American Caribbean. Elsa is for Asia Pacific. Ines is for Africa, and Michael for North America. So if you're interested in hearing a bit more and engaging and knowing about what we do, aside from these 2 minutes that we were assigned, please feel free to reach out. Yeah, okay, three, done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Louise. And Olivia, did our next speaker, Tijani, had got drawn in the acronym soup. Who is going to speak?
Tijani Benjema has drowned in the A, B's, and C's of ICANN. So I brought him over to E, Eduardo. Eduardo, E.D., Eduardo Diaz.
Three minutes,
or you can counting. At large, I'm going to go, instead of bottom up, I'm going to go top down. At large is, it brings all the interest of the end users, okay? And there is the at-large advisory committee, which we call ALAC. So we're an advisory committee within the ICANN structure. Now, at-large is divided in five regions, just like she mentioned. We have Asia-Pacific, Europe, North America, Africa is one of them, and I'm missing one, Latin America. So those regions are called what we call the regional at-large organizations, RALOS. So we have at large, composed of 15 people, right? And then we have RALOS, which are where we are composed by at large structures. At large structures are organizations like, in, for example, here in Puerto Rico, we have two of them, which is ISOC Puerto Rico. And we have HETS, which is another one here in Puerto Rico. And as such, we have many. We have ISOC Colorado. Most of them are ISOC. But also, in our region, in all the regions except one of them, we accept individual members that are interested in participating in these large structures, but they don't belong to an organization per se. Okay? So, a large... and then within the advisory committee, which is ALAC, at-large advisory committee, and then we have the RALOS, which is the regional at-large organizations. Am I missing something?
No.
Okay. 2 minutes and a half to me.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me, right? So for those who are already getting confused, why these guys are calling themselves non-commercial users constituency and those at large advisory committee, we are going to bring you to the hardcore. and explain what are the differences between NCUC and at large? And are we taking different positions on different issues? And I would like to handle it to Milton Müller. And you can have up to 5 minutes. Well, maybe three in the beginning and two for fighting with Olivier later.
I'll take five and fight with Olivier for 10. No. I mean, that would be more interesting than what we're actually going to do. But so, what is the difference between the non-commercial stakeholders group and the at-large? There's one very simple and very basic distinction which everyone should understand, and that is that the non-commercial stakeholder group is part of the GNSO. That is, it is a part of the policymaking for the generic names supporting organization, GNSO. And what is that? What is the GNSO? The GNSO is the policy development organ for the domain name system. If you remember the IANA transition, or if you were involved in that at all, you might have heard many times the Holy Trinity, names, numbers, and protocols. And that's what IANA is supposed to coordinate, is all three of those things. So when ICANN was first created, we had a supporting organization for names. We had one, and that's the GNSO. We have a supporting organization for numbers, and that's the ASO. And we sort of had one for protocols, but the protocol people decided that they didn't like the ICANN environment very much, and they defected, and they have never been seen since. Someday we'll get them back. But, so, the fundamental distinction here is that NCSG, or NCUC, or NPOC, anything that starts with an N.
Many acronyms.
The N-STARS, yeah. So that's all just one big acronym. Anything that's fundamentally tied into the GNSO, which I have explained, so that doesn't count as an acronym. And we have formal representation within the council, voting representation. We elect people, six people who sit on the council with the other constituency and stakeholder group representatives, and they actually make policy. Now, the at-large is actually an advisory committee. It's not one of the supporting organizations. It's not part of one of the supporting organizations. It's supposed to be an umbrella organization that covers them all. And they can express, as an advisory committee, they can express opinions about address issues, about domain name issues, about protocol issues, or about the position of the stars in the sky, right?
Right.
Right. And in terms of issues, do we have different positions on various issues? That is something I'll leave to the next round, but we're just talking about structure first.
Yes, yes. So, Olivier, Milton said that you were supposed to be something. What are you really is?
We are.
You are.
We are, and R as in not the letter R, otherwise I might get fined. But no, we're basically your nosy neighbor. You know, like, you paint your house and your neighbor comes over and says, you don't want to do it like this, you want to do it like that. Well, some people don't quite like the advice that the ALAC provides them. That's the nosy neighbor bit. So effectively, no. What happens is that the people in the GNSO, the different component parts of the GNSO, make the policy and vote on it, etc. We are an advisory committee, just like the government advisory committee as well, that are able to comment on pretty much, for the at-large advisory committee, anything and everything that happens at ICANN. So that includes the budget, that includes the structure of ICANN, that includes venues, anything really that takes place. But a large part of our work is actually taken into commenting about the policy that's being developed in the generic name supporting organization. We respond to public comments. We have the ability, we as in the at-large advisory committee and the at-large community, have the ability to comment at any time. We don't need to wait for a specific process. We also send people in the generic name supporting organization policy development processes when they take place, because everyone is allowed to go and take part in these. But the important bit is that we have the second way, if you want, to then comment on things once they've been voted on by the generic name supporting organization. So it's a little difficult sometimes to think, yeah, but wait a minute, what's the difference between you two? Because it sounds quite similar as well. And in fact, it is true. We do have members that are members of both the NCUC and of the at-large community. We have organizations that are members from both. And they, I guess, concede sort of a two different perspectives and have the ability to either take part directly into the processes and select people in the hierarchy that votes, or go and do the commenting. At large, in addition to this, has a really strong component part of having to go out there and outreach, reaching out. NCUC does it. We've also got that in our community. Now, the next step, I guess, is to find out, do we align with each other on absolutely every single topic?
It's a very hard task because you have 2 minutes for punches and hooks. So try, Milton, you start.
Okay, let me go get ready to duck.
No reason to do that, because this will be a softball. So, the non-commercial stakeholders group consists of people basically who started getting involved in ICANN because they were resisting trademark maximalism on behalf of free speech advocates and civil liberties advocates. So we were pulled into the policy development process on the basis of kind of a rights-based freedom of expression, privacy position. So most of the people in the non-commercial stakeholder groups are upholding these individual rights, and they are they're kept busy when they try to do that because there's so many other stakeholder groups that are not upholding those rights. Now, the difference, I think, as I see it, on positions, there's no inherent difference. In other words, the people who join at-large organizations in the ALAC could indeed end up with the same position as we do. There's nothing structural about these differences. I think the main difference is that at-large incorporates non-commercial as well as non-commercial people. So if you're a business consultant or something, or you're an individual who's working for, let's say, a big telecom operator, you would be welcome to be in the at-large system, a RALO. You could even get elected to the committee, and you wouldn't necessarily have to be a non-commercial stakeholder. And the reason it created a non-commercial stakeholder group within the GNSO is because the environment there was so dominated by basically registries and registrars who are businesses, trademark holders who are businesses, internet service providers who are businesses, and businesses which are businesses. So somebody at some point said, wait a minute, what about, you know, the non-commercial stake in domain name policy? And so they created a specifically and exclusively non-commercial stakeholder group. So on these examples, consumer trust, privacy, freedom of speech, I think, you know, within both groups there is some overlap of positions and some where one position is more dominant in, let's say, at large than in NCUC. But again, there's nothing structural about those differences. It's more a question of, you know, who is formulating the position and what is the predominant opinion within either group?
So just to pick this off then, so that wasn't very much of a hook. I get the British go away type sign. Thank you. First question, you mentioned non-commercial. So we're talking just civil society, basically. NCUC, is that all civil society?
No, we have there's the real history here. I don't know if we have time to go into it, but when At Large was originally created, it was all about the individual internet user. They were actually supposed to be a democratic voting electorate for electing half of the board, and so they were supposed to represent individual internet users. Now, when ICANN's board decided they didn't want to have elections anymore because the wrong people won them, they abolished that form of the at-large, and they created this RALO structure, which consisted of organizations. And so suddenly ICANN was faced with a situation where individuals could not actually join the at-large which was designed and created to represent individual internet users. So at that point, the NCUC said, well, we will allow individuals to join because, number one, many of them are representing, you know, are in need of representation. They have a non-commercial interest in their domain name. They might just be a household user. They might be a small organization or a small advocate who doesn't have any organization. And secondly, they might be a member of a very large organization like a university, and they can't get their entire university to join because that goes up through levels of hierarchy. So we said, let's just let individuals join NCUC, and then, you know, the rest, as they say, is history.
To confuse you further, At-Large now allows for individuals to join as well. However, wait.
Give me the microphone.
Just the three issues, consumer trust, privacy, and freedom of speech. There is one thing. At-Large is actually not purely civil society, and I think that's one of the things. You did say we did have some commercial components. We're all end users. So end users could actually be non-civil society actors. And I think that one of the differences here, for example, consumer trust, there is a stronger component At-Large to say, well, for example, in when you deal with who is, well, a significant portion of our community and At-Large wishes to have the full details of a domain name holder. Whilst I'm not quite sure that it's the same kind of outlook in the NCUC, where there might be a stronger emphasis on privacy and a stronger emphasis on freedom of speech. And At-Large, there's probably a stronger emphasis on consumer trust. And so the At-Large community sometimes is aligned with the government's advisory committee point of view, which, of course, Milton would not quite agree with governments-wise. But there's a sort of, you know, it's a different angle that is sometimes taken by the At-Large. But we are most of the time aligned on issues.
Thank you very much. I'm very sorry that Milton has no time to agree or disagree on this. We have to wrap this up somehow. And I believe that we can even skip the point what we can do together and how we cooperate because it was covered already. We are cooperating here now and many of us. You know, we had the first joint session in Copenhagen and one of the members of both At-Large and NCUC told that in terms of policy making and advice and being members of both, we are promiscuous. He used this word because we can actually be members of both and advance our agenda in both structures. And how we are doing this and where we are aligned on what we are working on, you're going to hear in the next session because we are moving to the hardcore policy. And I believe that now it's time to talk about big topic for ICANN and for many of you and us, GDPR compliance at ICANN.
And what is GDPR?
Yes,
because
I'm fine. General data protection regulation in Europe. Yes, I'm going to buy myself this German letter pasta. So I'm going to give the floor to Holly and Aydin. Holly is a member of At-Large, and Aydin is a member of NCUC.
There are supposed to be two slides of mine.
But
where are they?
Okay, no slides, go for it.
No slides, you can... Why did I bother? All right, we haven't got much time anyway. What to point out about GDPR, you all know what it stands for, General Data Protection. What Aydin and I decided to do was split it first for me to explain the background and then for Aydin to actually pick up with the sort of compliance models. So to start with the background for, and it's GDPR, the first thing I have to say is this is not about just European data protection. It is ignoring the fact that globally there's a lot of data protection law in Australia, in Canada, in a lot of Asia. So these issues are global. And it's not just about privacy, it's about other issues, but this is what we're going to concentrate on. The background that I would have shown on the slides really starts with the very, very early days before pre-ICANN, when in fact your directory services were amongst colleagues and friends, and therefore the sharing of data was fine. In fact, it was understandable, and that was okay. When ICANN took over the services, they adopted who wears services, and what was applicable and fine between friends is not applicable and fine between billions of people. However, the who is then became an issue. Now, it started off, if you look at 1980s, and I say 1983 because that's when the OECD privacy principles came in as a model. Just about the same time you have ICANN adopting the public who is. For those who don't know, and probably you haven't memorized clause 3.3.1 of the RIA, which is the Registration Accreditation Agreement, they list the personal information that must be made publicly available on a website and port 43. Name, address, telephone number, fax number, if anybody knows what a fax is. All these things must be publicly available. They have been.
How many people were born before 1983? I'm saying before because I don't think there'll be that as many. Yeah, so that's it. Only a few people were born before 1983, and you're really talking about like prehistoric times. Goodness, talk about having to fix this GDPR thing within a month.
Thank you, Olivier. The point being made that what was a reasonable requirement back when pre-ICANN days is now obviously not appropriate in the 21st century. There's a clear contradiction, and if you look at all of the who is working groups that have happened since then, there's always been a tension between the people who have had access and used that access to personal data, and that's a lot of groups, and increasingly an awareness of privacy of individuals saying, well, wait a minute, who's got my data? It shouldn't be available. And in fact, one of the catalysts for the Who Is review team, which was 2012, some of the inaccuracies, they started to say, well, maybe this is because people know that their names are going to be out there. So, in fact, you had a lot of people named Mickey Mouse, and you had a lot of people named Donald Duck, and a lot of them lived on Sunset Boulevard.
And Father Christmas also.
And Father Christmas. So there were lots of people who wished, for good or ill, to hide their names and addresses. So when you had with Fadi Shahadi, I haven't finished. I've got one more minute. When you had Fadi Shahadi, he established two things. One, a working group, the PDP RDS group, to look at accuracy as well as access to that information. And he set up what's called the expert working group. The result of the expert working group was a huge step because they said it is not sustainable anymore to mandate all of this public, these personal information being made public. Now, there's lots of disagreement about the details, but it was a big step to say we have to move away from the RIA. At this point, things split up. So we now have the RDS working group. As Aidan knows, it's going through leaps and bounds, making progress, right? Thank you. And at the same time, though, and this is where the GDPR comes in, when you think about the GDPR and data controllers, think back, who is the contracting parties for the RIA? Registrars and ICANN. ICANN has become a data controller, and they are requiring breaches of privacy that are against the GDPR. What is this? What is the downside? They may get fined 4%, not of profit, but of turnover. This means they had to come up with a solution long before the RDS will ever come up with a solution at all. And that's why we have the modules. Olivier, I'm very strong and I lift weights. Be careful. That's why Aidan's going to talk about the modules, because this is how ICANN gets away with being a controller.
Thanks, Ollie. And Hi, everyone. My name is Aidan Thudlin. And just to sort of touch on the broader question of GDPR compliance at ICANN and where are we at? Well, there are 60 days left until enforcement of the GDPR comes into effect. ICANN is not at all prepared. ICANN does not comply with data protection laws in any countries. It's been aware of this for 20 years, and it has an auction proceeds fund with $250 million unallocated. And so to me, it seems like it is overexposed and a very obvious target for a data protection agency to come after. It doesn't comply with the law, it doesn't care, and it has the capacity to pay the maximum fine. So, even if we did have a model to implement, can that happen within the next 2 months? It seems unlikely to me. Registrars have complex systems that would have to be reconfigured. Last summer, they said they would need a model by last September to actually implement a solution. Which we just talked about, is not the only thing, though, that ICANN needs to take into consideration. ICANN has other data sets containing personal data, zone files, escrow data, the contracts that govern the contracted parties and their agents, other internal data. These instruments also need to meet the GDPR in 2 months' time. I don't know what the status of ICANN's work internally is, but I suspect it's not great. Unfortunately, there is a rather long history of ICANN not responding to requests from compliance from the data protection authorities. I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. ICANN now has a data protection officer who had appointed late last year who has rather unusual background, zero experience in privacy or data protection, and he also is not involved in the development of the compliance models that Holly just mentioned. In terms of the compliance models themselves, they seem to change quite rapidly at the moment. Two have been published in the past week. And for that reason, and they change. There's a lot of inconsistencies. There, you know, in some respects, there are things that I would be comfortable with, and there are also pieces that are very underdeveloped. So I think that the simple answer to the question of GDPR compliance in ICANN, ICANN will not be compliant when the GDPR comes into effect because it has not been compliant with data protection law for 20 years, and I don't think the organization particularly cares. But I do think it's overexposed.
Thank you very much, Aidan and Holly. Are there any questions for now? Yes, please.
Narina is speaking. I'm from At Large, and I'm also a member of NCUC, and my question is to Aidan. In terms of GDPR compliance models, are there any differences in approaches in NCUC and ALAC at large? Thank you very much.
Thanks for the question. Aidan, for the record, I can't speak to at large because I'm not a member. But I imagine that we are on the same page on this issue. But I'll let Holly expand upon that perhaps.
I'd like to say there's a unified position. I think it's kinder and more honest to say there's actually a disagreement. There certainly are different views as to, and one of the real important issues is the extent to which individuals should have access to individual personal information. There's some views that in fact individuals ought to be able to track down the personal details of a website and the names of customer protection. My personal view, and it is a personal view, not an ALAC view, is this would not be allowed under the GDPR or indeed the European directives that preceded that or that underpins it, but that consumer protection will happen through a range of agencies, of consumer protection agencies. So, if there's a summary, it is that there's a genuine, honest debate, and I think that there are probably quite genuine and different views on that matter.
Thank you, Holly. I have Tijani in the queue with a short intervention, and then Milton Müller, and then we will move to the next issue. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Tijani.
And Adam. Tijani first, then Adam, and
okay.
Then... yes.
Thank
you. Okay.
Sorry,
sorry, one moment.
My apologies. Adam Peake, ICANN staff. I have to be a little bit careful what I say because of the importance with complying with GDPR. But I think you said that the privacy person in ICANN staff was not compliant with GDPR. I think if you look at the announcement of that person's position to their privacy duties within ICANN, it's actually to look at the internal requirements of privacy and data issues, nothing to do with GDPR. In fact, the announcement at the time said it was not to meet the data protection officer requirements of GDPR. And I think I've said this previously on a list, so let's both make sure that we're correct on this, Aidan. I will come back to you with the accurate information, but until then, I think you're wrong, so please be careful and don't repeat this, because I've said it before, and yeah, it would be good to be accurate. It's very important that we're compliant with GDPR. ICANN staff will be compliant with GDPR in this issue, and I think you're incorrect, and I have mentioned this before. Thank you.
Thank you. But I just want to say I'm not prepared to withdraw my remark, and I stand by it. Thank you.
Thank you. Tijani.
It's not wrong.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you to say that ICANN will not comply with the GDPR in May. ICANN cannot comply in May. It is simply because the GDPR has at least three things. First, collection of data. Second, storage. And third, processing of data. And the models presented didn't address those issues. And when we speak about a collection of data, we have to speak about the purpose. And this is also something that is not well defined. And at least what they are saying now, I don't agree with it. And I don't think it will be compliant with GDPR. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. Milton, you have some time for short intervention, and then we move on.
Yeah, I just think in terms of discussing the GDPR issue and the WHOIS issue, it's no longer a case of saying what would we like to have in terms of what data is available. It's a question of what ICANN must do to comply. So up to now, the debate has been about, gee, we would really like this data to be available. We think it's good. And other people said, no, we got to have privacy. Now it's a matter of compliance. Otherwise, ICANN and its registries and registrars are subject to fines.
And I think we'll leave the GDPR to this. No, Holly, one last word. Holly Reich.
Just a final word for those who don't have anything else to do with their time. The ICANN.org has just come out with a 58-page update on the module proposal, which is their way of ensuring compliance. None of us have had a chance to read it yet, but just watch this space, and it shows how fast everything is going if you're going to keep up with this particular issue in ICANN. Thank you.
Thank you, Holly. And you can see now how hot the discussion can get just on these four letters, GDPR. So there's a lot going on about GDPR this week. And if this is just a little bit of a taste of what's going to happen during the week, I think we're in for some great fun. So don't miss those sessions. Over to what's the next one? Human rights.
Woo. Yeah, we have a bit of a change of the agenda, but before we move to human rights, guys who are tweeting, we see your tweets. We are going to monitor them and reply to you later. We have packed agenda. We can't address everything for
this
now.
Is such a Russian way to say it. We are going to monitor them.
Yes. We will be summoned to answer their questions. So now we are moving to human rights, and we have two amazing speakers, resource persons who work on human rights, and I'm passing it to Bastian to provide you with some retrospective and then to Colin to provide some forward-looking perspective on human rights.
Thank you, Tatiana. My name is Bastian Goslings. I'm from the Netherlands, an at-large advisory committee member. I'd first like to know, especially from the newcomers, who thinks that human rights are important? Well, I think, aren't there any more? Well, assuming that we all feel that human rights, or maybe it's so obvious, human rights, that you respect human rights, but in any case, if you're not aware and it's news to you, then maybe happy to learn that by now ICANN has, as part of its bylaws, a core value that it is meant in the future to respect international recognized human rights as required by applicable law. And just in case you don't know what the bylaws are, that's basically ICANN's own laws. They frame the scope of ICANN's activities, ICANN's remit, and also how ICANN is supposed to perform its activities. And including that, there's also a set of core values. And these are values that are meant to guide ICANN's operations. And one of them now is human rights, respecting of human rights. But where did that come from? It was already referred to, the IANA transition. I'm not sure if everyone knows what that is. I don't have time to go into that. But a number of years ago, there was still an oversight role of the U.S. government over the IANA functions as performed by ICANN. And in 2014, the U.S. government proposed to let go of this oversight role and to hand it over to the ICANN multi-stakeholder community itself. But in order to do so, the U.S. government asked ICANN to get the multi-stakeholder community together, so all the different constituencies within ICANN, in order to formulate not only a proposal how to replace the U.S. government's position, the role they used to have or still had at the time, but also how, combined with that, to improve ICANN's accountability mechanisms. So this multi-stakeholder group that came together was called a cross-community working group. They first started with work that was supposed to be finished as part of the proposal towards the U.S. government, hoping that they would accept the proposal and then oversight would be transferred. And another part of the work would be fulfilled after that. As part of these discussions within this cross-community working group, the idea came up, and people felt very strong about that, that a commitment to respect human rights would have to be included in the ICANN bylaws. Because one of the criteria that the U.S. government put forward in order to transfer the oversight role was to maintain the openness of the Internet. And you could imagine that would include free expression and free flow of information, those type of rights applicable. Well, the cross-community working group itself decided, okay, we're not going to name any specific human right. It's just we want in the bylaws a commitment for ICANN to respect internationally recognized human rights. That eventually became the case. It was also part of the package that was proposed to the U.S. government and that was accepted. So the core value is now there, but it became effective immediately. Part of the work stream too, so the follow-up work for the cross-community working group, was to come up with a framework of interpretation. So how exactly would we make an interpretation of this core value in order to take the next step, implementation? Hey, how are we going to implement this within the ICANN, the organization, within the different stakeholder groups? Well, I'm happy to say that actually a couple of months ago already, this framework of interpretation was consensus was reached, despite a minority opinion of a small group of governments that wanted more explicit attention for a particular framework. But now this is to be compiled with all the other work that's been done as part of Workstream 2. And I think the timeline is, like, say, roughly in June, it will be presented to the board and hopefully once they approve it, then this bylaw can become applicable. And then the next step is, or we're already working on that, how are we going to implement this? How is this going to affect, in my case, or for my constituents, how is this going to affect at large? How are we going to deal with that? And I want to give Colin now the floor in order to touch upon, you know, the next steps and the practical sides of it, how we're going to implement this.
Thank you. This is Colin Curry, for the record. I work for a freedom of expression organization called Article 19. And then I also am co-chairing the Cross-Community Working Party on ICANN and Human Rights. My co-chair, Michael Karanikolas, is not with us today because he is fighting the good fight in a policy development process session right now. To refer back to this framework of interpretation that Bastian mentioned, I think it's best for me to just go ahead and read straight from it, one of the applicable lines, which says, in order to put the human rights core value, which is the value to respect human rights as required by applicable law, into practice, ICANN, the community, as well as the organization, so in parentheses, the distinction here is ICANN, the organization, which is kind of like the coordinating body, and then the community would be the different supporting organizations and advisory committees that kind of develop the policy for the empowered community, for the body itself. Let's see. ICANN, the community, as well as the organization, will need to consider how to reflect this core value in their policy and operational processes. Each supporting organization and advisory committee should take the core value into consideration in its policy development or advisory role. It is up to each supporting organization and advisory committee and ICANN, the organization, to develop their own policies and frameworks to fulfill this core value. So, as you can see, it kind of passes the buck to each supporting organization and advisory committee to devise their own mechanisms for complying with this bylaw, with this mandate to respect international human rights frameworks. So how each supporting organization, SO, and advisory committee, AC, is going to do this remains a big question mark. So in the Cross-Community Working Party on Human Rights, this working party has been chartered, was chartered actually 10 ICANNs ago. It's our little anniversary, this ICANN, to map different policies and procedures and operations within ICANN that might impact human rights, and then provide information, suggestions, recommendations on to chartering organizations, to the supporting organizations and the advisory committees, on how to mitigate negative effects. So one way that you could do this was through human rights impact assessments, but that's not the only way. So what we are going to have to do in the community at large and in the at-large community is to try to develop means for each supporting organization and advisory committee to live up to this bylaw and to incorporate some sort of mechanism to reflect and respect human rights in their decision-making processes. This is a big ask, and it will obviously require the expertise and the input from people who are intimately involved with the decision-making processes of these bodies. So the future of human rights, we've got a really solid base that we're working from with the human rights bylaw and the framework of interpretation, which spells things out very clearly. But there's still a lot of gray zone and a lot of details that we need to figure out.
Bad with microphones. Thank you very much, Colin. And just to sum up for you guys and move to the next, if you have any questions, you can approach three people: Colin, me, and Bastian. We are the people who are dealing with the framework of interpretation. And, you know, just to make it simple, it's an interesting process. First, we got a human rights bylaw, and we were like, yow, we have human rights. No, we need a framework of interpretation. Now we have it, and we cannot say yow, because we need to go and work on implementation of this framework of interpretation. I know it's mind-boggling, but it also shows you that you can step in at any stage. It's never too late. Write us, approach us, join Cross-Community Working Party, join NCUC, join ALAC, and human rights, they're always interesting topic. And now we're getting deep into the trenches, because now we're going to talk about one of the hottest topics at ICANN, and we have two of the hottest speakers here, one from NCUC and one from At Large. They're just back from the trenches. The issue is called geographical top-level domain names, right? And it's the so-called work track 5. And can I ask Robin to speak first and then Cheryl? Robin, tell us a bit. You, I know it's hard 3 to 4 minutes to talk about this, but whatever you, yeah.
If you thought GDPR was fun, just wait until you hear this.
Yeah, it's much fun. Stay tuned.
So Work Track 5 in the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group is focusing on what's called geographic names. So this is sort of an outgrowth of this, the last new GTLD process, where there's a lot of pressure to try to sort of restrict the use of words in the domain name system that may have a geographic meaning. So a lot of this pressure comes from governments, but not exclusively. So there are a lot of times governments will say, well, we think that we should decide who gets to use that word, or we think we should decide how that word gets to be used, because somehow that word belongs to us. We believe it belongs to us in some way. So that's sort of what this Work Track 5 has been created to sort of work through, is this tension between quartering off certain words, saying these are geographic words and therefore they need to be sort of reserved, and governments get to decide how they're used and by whom they are used and the ways in which they are used. And then there are, so that's sort of background. So from my perspective and from the perspective of the non-commercial users, we're really concerned about this, particularly from a freedom of expression standpoint. People have freedom of expression rights to use words that refer to geographic places or, cities and states and regions and mountains and rivers. And, I mean, the list really goes on and on and on about the kinds of words that could be restricted in this way. And we're just sort of beginning in this process right now in Work Track 5. It's further behind than the other four work tracks in the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group. So now is the time to get engaged, and now is the time to, if you're interested in this issue, if you care about this issue, please join Work Track 5. And like right now, we're really kind of focusing on a definition for what is a geographic name, because we've got all sorts of ideas that people have put forward. They say, well, currency codes should be in there, and airport codes should be in there, and words that refer to a culture, or, you know, it's a very slippery slope in terms of the kinds of words that can be restricted and people's rights to use these words. So this is the concern that I have, and that members of my stakeholder group have in this Work Track 5, is trying to make sure that ordinary individuals' rights, freedom of expression rights, to use words, even if somebody else maybe doesn't want you to use them, can be respected and has a place in the policy development process, the recognition that freedom of expression in the domain name system is really important to the free flow of information on the internet and the growth and health of the development of the internet going forward. So there's a bit of a precedential aspect to this too, in the sense of, well, if words can be restricted for this reason, maybe they can then be restricted for this other reason, and further on down the line. So it's a very slippery slope, and now is the time to set the precedent on this issue. So that's just sort of a little bit of background and a little bit of perspective from the freedom of expression viewpoint that we care about in Work Track 5. So I will turn it over to Cheryl now.
Before I pass to Cheryl, just to let you all know who are newcomers, once you feel like you're getting lost or you don't know what is your topic, join something new and controversial. I'm just telling you as someone who was a newcomer only 2.5 years ago, join someone in the beginning, and maybe this is the right track to join for you, because this has something that anyone could have concerns about. Cheryl, I'm sorry, and yeah, over to you.
No, thank you. Thank you, Tatiana. Cheryl Langton, off the record, and don't be sorry at all, because that's wise advice. And I certainly agree with Robin. This is an ideal topic to dip your toe in terms of becoming involved and engaged as a newcomer or otherwise in a policy development process. I'm one of the overall co-chairs of the subsequent procedures for new GTLDs policy development process, which takes almost half of the 3 minutes we've got to say. So I'm going to stretch it a little tiny bit beyond just Work Track 5 and the thrill-packed and exciting adventure of geographic names. And just want to note that we do have a couple of people who, and I think I'm only spotting you, Javier, if you just wave your hand over there. He is now one of the co-chairs. Oh, sorry, let me say that again. One of the co-leads of the Work Track 5. And what's different about Work Track 5 in geo names and the trenches that we're working in is that it's designed to recognise that we do expect wide community interest and input on this topic. Each of the other four work tracks have quite a few issues that they're looking at. Some of them are sexier than others. I happen to still co-lead with Rubens on the technical issues and internationalised domain names. And we think that's really sexy stuff. But apparently not a lot of other people think so, because we've got a rather small group. But if you want to join that, that's fine too. But with the geo names, we recognise that rather than just have two co-leads, which really just helps administratively manage the work tracks, we needed to recognise that the at-large advisory committee has interest, the country code name support organisation, the CCNSO has interest, obviously the GNSO has interest, it's a GNSO PDP for heaven's sake, and the GAC has interest. So you've got four co-leads, and that does make this a little bit unique. What that also means is we have some cultural clashing from the very beginning. The way the GAC, for example, deals with what consensus is vastly different. Their decision-making process is vastly different, and the expectations they have can be quite different to what we would expect in, for example, a CCNSO policy development process or the GNSO PDP guidelines.
Cheryl, I'm sorry to stop you. GAC, Governmental Advisory Committee... CCNSO country code. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
I'm not at all sure. Perhaps the NCUC can help us on that.
So, I'm sorry for the interruption. It's just I've got the acronym alert. Are there any questions? For now. Yes.
Thank you very much, TJ speaking. The geo names is now a war between two interests, the political interest and the commercial interest. We, NCUC and at large, we are not in those interests. And our interest is to make it for the community, make it for freedom of expression, as Robin said. And this is the way, and this is why I think that we have to push toward the community GTLDs. It must be, in my point of view, a prioritization of the community GTLDs for those geo names. And also, we don't have to fall in the trap being defending neither political interest nor the commercial interest. Thank you.
I have a question to Cheryl in this regard. Do you actually have a common position at large concerning this issue, geo names?
Oh, Cheryl Langdon, for the record, and I certainly wouldn't want to speak on behalf of at large, let alone on behalf of the ALAC. I am aware that within geo names we have diverse opinions, not only between the regional areas, but within the regional areas, because small island states have a very different view to other characteristics, for example. But what is important, of course, is that each of the SOs and ACs themselves also get to have a comment when the final report comes out, which should be at the end of this year, and geonames should catch up with the other four work tracks by then, because they only have the one thing to look at, that's geonames. The rest have got five, six, sometimes seven things. So by the end of this year, you should all have an opportunity for public comment.
Yeah, actually, I find the diversity of positions fascinating. No, I have to admit that when I look at this diversity, I really find it fascinating. And this is another tip for you guys. Whatever position you have, you can still express it
using these two tools.
Yes.
If I can jump in on this, actually, it's funny because one would wonder and think, yeah, but why are geo names coming up to the head now, you know, because we've already had like a round of new generic top-level domains and all that, and ICANN's been in business for, what, 20 years or something, nearly? So it's like, why is it coming up now? Well, because there is a big case there. There's the Amazon case. And that kind of really brought the heat into this with having, you know, the Amazon region and the Amazon company. And sometimes things just come up to the surface because of such cases. And now we've got to find some kind of a solution for this. Thanks.
Thank you. Cheryl?
I'm quite sure you want to start wrapping up now, but I also wanted to just mention that the default on the geographic names, just like the default on everything else the subsequent procedure working group is looking at, is if we do not reach consensus for a recommendation to change from what happened in the 2012 round, then those rules will still apply. And therefore, that's important to recognise. It's not as if we're going to make a change unless we have consensus to make a change. Mm-hmm. Thus, your voices are important to be heard.
Thank you. Robin, do you have anything to add? I would really love to continue about this, like about any topic, because any of them actually warrants the entire session in our group. But yeah, you see some discussions are heated. So I would like to wrap up these policy issues and move to the third agenda item, which is navigating ICANN maze. How can you actually get involved? You're listening to all these fascinating stuff and heated discussions and hot potato topics and whatever, but what can you actually do there? And I believe that we lost a bit one of our speakers, which is Rafiq, who is the chair of the policy committee. So I would like to ask Aidan, who is the elected GNSO councillor at NCSG, to start with the issue. How do you actually join on all these policy development processes? How are you actually join the working group? And how you navigate yourself there. Aidan, please.
Great. Thank you for that. Hi, everyone. Aidan Bertolin for the record. So there are many ways in which you can become involved in ICANN's multi-stakeholder, bottom-up, consensus-driven model for policy development. And the most effective way, in my opinion, in which you can voice your position about an issue is to shape the dialogue and the deliberations of that policy topic by joining a working group. In the GNSO, working groups are initiated by what is called the GNSO Council, although some are also initiated by the board. So these working groups are formally chartered to address policies and other issues that are facing the internet community, and they're composed of interested volunteers like yourself with various types of interests and expertise and coming from a wide range of regions. Most working groups have a membership which is geographically dispersed. So the primary means of meeting is through webinars, and these are usually 2 to 4 times per month, although there are some working groups that meet a bit more frequently. You can also dial in. There's a toll-free audio bridge number that you can call, or ICANN staff can call out to you if that's easier. If you're new to the community, it's generally easier to join a working group just as it's forming. But you can also join a working group that's already in progress. Doing so just requires that you catch up a bit on the work, research, discussions that have already been covered. But that's not too challenging because all meetings are recorded and transcriptions are available as well. In terms of what you would actually do in a working group, you would be developing and drafting working group documents. You would be contributing your ideas and knowledge to shape the discussions. You would be actively and constructively participating in the consensus decision-making process. And you also get to see the multi-stakeholder model in action rather than just hearing about it. It sounds really abstract at the moment, but if you join a working group, you can see how is consensus actually reached. You will form a sense of collegiality with others. You can fight for what you believe in. You can be effective in making a change, no matter how minimal that might be. You can learn the language of policy, the process of policy. You can fight for, getting the issues that you care about actually inside of the domain name policies that ICANN shapes. You can build a network of people who are the top experts in their field. You can become a leader or within the community even. So I think there's a lot of reasons to become a part of a working group, and I hope you give that some thought. Thanks.
And sometimes when you reach consensus at the end of a long working group process, you have indeed developed such friendships with people that you might have actually shouted at or been really unhappy with, and think, you know what, we've all been out of this war, and here is one that we've all succeeded in putting through. You just feel this sense of pride and happiness. Aww. But you don't get a medal at the end, unfortunately. There you go.
Olivia, you just ate a minute from the at-large speaker, Sebastian. Could you please provide at-large perspective on this topic?
Thank you very much, Sébastien Bachelet speaking, and thank you, Olivier, to take 1 minute like that. It will be shorter for me. I wanted to, I don't know if I will give the at-large perspective. I want to give you a broader perspective, because we talk about policy development process within the GNSO, but you have to know that there are such name the same policy development process in the two other supporting organizations. And it's important to take that into account, because if you want to be involved, you can be involved in the address supporting organizations through the RAR at the regional level or local level, and you can be involved at the CCNSO policy development process also. Generally, it's done at the local and regional level also, but there are some way to be involved. And if we talk about at large, obviously, it's not a place where we develop policy development, but it's a place where you can participate to working group to discuss with your peers. And it could be one way to be included and involved in one topic, starting, I will say, and sorry for that, at a low level, just to discuss with your peers. And then if you are ready, and if you think that it's a good time, you can go to the PDP. It's to say that there are different ways. We talk about other processes. There are different processes possible. Then just pick one and do it, and we will be happy to have you participating. It's important because your voice is equal to the voice of your neighborhood, and it's important to be here, and we like to have you on board. Thank you.
And if I can just add, there are some people out there that get paid for doing this stuff. So they can spend 24/7, working group, policy development process. Some people are paid to be in that. So that's part of their job. It's not really part of our job. That's why we need more people to take part. That's why we're asking you to help us as well, because it's not our job, but we need sleep too.
And so we are moving to the next item, because sometimes you don't know which group to join. You don't know how to get yourself acquainted, you know, with all these policy words and languages and worlds. And I would like to ask Rafiq, who is back to us, to talk about public comments. Rafiq is the vice chair of the GNSO Council and the head of the policy committee at the non-commercial stakeholder group. Rafiq, if you can cover public comments and maybe add something to the policy development process and join working groups, this would be cool. Thank you. You can have 4 minutes if you want.
Okay. Thanks, Tatiana. This is Rafiq speaking. Okay, I mean, it's a good question there. It's grabbing a pen. Nobody grab pen. We do everything online. But I think it's a good question in the way that as a group, what we do, even if we have a policy committee at the stakeholder group level, we do a call for volunteers to get our members to take the lead and draft a comment that we can work around it. So we do the call of volunteers first place when we identify that there is an opportunity or a need to respond to a public comment. And from there, we try to get kind of, let's say, a straw person document that we can consult with our members and try to edit and so on. Our process is that even we have a policy committee, the policy committee is not supposed to draft the comments per se, but to manage the process and really to give opportunity to volunteers to work on that. So after that, some consultation, and depending. One of the constraints is usually the public comment is for 40 days. It's not enough long when anyone can check in the page for public comments, and I can, you will find, I think, around 5 or 6 in the same time. So that's put a lot of pressure in people in drafting quickly, and also to have time to go through so many public consultation in the same time. So this is the kind of still an ad hoc process at the end, because we try to encourage even newcomer to jump in and draft comment, but it's sometimes more efficient and effective to get those who are involved in the working groups to take the lead, and so to give guidance about the public comments. So to the question from Tatiana about the working group and process, I think it's an important reminder that the public comment are just one of the milestone for whole policy development process. And while it's important to participate and to share the position of the group and also encourage even those outside the ICANN to participate, and it happened several times, it's just, one part of how to influence policy. Is still more, I think, more important to participate in the working group itself, because that's where the whole discussion happened and all the deliberation happened. So you can try to influence by participating in public comment, but that's maybe my personal belief. It's more important to get involved in the working group in first place, to not leave at the end. At the end, in those maybe two public consultation for working groups to try to influence the process. So if we are talking about the policy development process, we have to take the whole thing. So it's participating in working group, even participating in the beginning. Now, many of them, they have what they call the community consultation. So you have to participate in all the steps, and still you are not sure if you can influence or not. So it's...
I think you need to stop, because everyone's going like, oh,
yes,
my God.
Rafiq, instead of doing outreach, you're doing runaway right now thing.
I'm ready to give up. I'm just counting it.
It's important. It's important to explain why we're trying to do this and to be strategical in how you influence the policy, because there is, it will be a mistake for many people to think that just let's wait for a public comment and I will change everything. It won't really happen like that.
That's true. Public comment will change nothing.
So it's one of the part of the whole process. You have to take the whole.
Well, a little.
I have a remote question from Renata for Rafiq. She asks, is it the biggest challenge reaching consensus or understanding what is being debated in policy?
In both. Because, STEM constraint, if we are talking at the stakeholder group level, not everyone really maybe understand the issues, and not everyone will review the background material. So you have to educate people, the members, about the issue. And when come to kind of have to build the common position, it can sometimes be contentious in some issue, but still we are able to find a common ground. It's because one approach is to say is as a group we have to work on common position, but if individuals or other organization they want to elaborate more or they have a different view, that we encourage them to do so and to submit and with their own capacity. But usually we reach at the end some consensus. Is one way is to ask people, really, it's not just make a comment, I'm not happy with this or that, but to maybe suggest some wording or phrasing and try to work around that. So it's kind of always kind of continuous work, and to find some acceptable text for everyone that, not make everyone happy, but satisfied to some
Thank
level.
Thank you.
When everyone is unhappy, that means you've reached consensus.
No, we make everyone happy.
We have a short question from here before we move to Bastian.
Narina is speaking. My question is to Rafiq. There have been a lot of discussions about increasing the effectiveness of participation. Is there any assessment or any comparison about on the participation between NCUC, effectiveness of participation between NCUC and at large, like the number of comments submitted, the number of people participated in policy development, so on and so forth? Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. I don't think it's a competition in first place, but I think also it's about priority in which public comment you cover. We don't respond to all. So we are making by default some priority in what we think it's really related to us, if it's about generic TLD policy. And I think for last year we responded maybe roughly to 30 public comment. I cannot speak for the ALAC. Maybe Bastian later can respond to this. But I don't see it's a competition or... So it's because the area of what we cover can be different. There is overlap, but also there are different interests. So,
thank you, Rafiq. Bastian, can you provide at large perspective? We are moving toward the end. We started later. Bear with us. We are going to wrap up soon.
Yeah, thank you for that. Bastian speaking. It was touched upon earlier that as an advisory committee, we are in a luxury position, that we can provide advice or make statements at any time we feel like with regard to any ICANN-related topic. So as long as we're creative there, you know, and want to put something on the agenda, then we are at liberty to do so whenever we want to. I want to touch upon something that Rafiq mentioned with regard to the importance of participating in working groups in PDP, the PDP work itself. Just so all of you know, even if you're active within at large, via your at-large structure, within your RELO, maybe even as an ALEC member, that doesn't mean you can't participate in a PDP yourself. I think that's also very important. So even if you're working within the ALEC as part of an advisory committee or within at-large doing work there, you can still, as an individual, participate, and I would definitely suggest and recommend to do so, participate in well, especially GNSO PDP. So most of the PDPs are come from the GNSO. So let's focus on that. Then participate there and try to influence the outcome of what happens within a particular working group. But then, besides that, looking at the public comments that we're talking about now, those are of course set moments. They're announced publicly. And whether it's PDP work, reports coming from within a PDP working group, intermediary reports, but also now just finished with regard to the ICANN budget. You have CC, cross-community work reports. Most of these, you know, have public comment periods with regard to the results that they come up with. And then probably it's comparable for at large, as Rafiq just described for the NCUC. There's also like, how do we choose which public comments which periods we want to reflect on and participate in and submit a response. So also for us, you know, it's a call for volunteers. And the announcements for the public comment periods are public. They are also passed on via our mailing list, you know, to the at-large community. And then people are solicited. Not on the one hand, do you think it's important that at-large reflects on this and submits a response? And especially, of course, do you yourself want to be a pen holder or very practical and more resource sharing, do it together with others, right? Like form a team and work on this. And this is also discussed during RELO calls. I'm from the European region, so that's EURELO. We have a list of experts with regard to different topics, and we can also proactively approach these people in terms of, hey, this is a topic that we consider you to be an expert on. Would you like to participate in this and help, you know, draft something for a public comment? We do the same during ALEC calls. Responding on behalf of ALEC is maybe something challenging in terms of, it's not always as easy to find consensus. There's a lot of diversity within at large and within the ALEC. So indeed, you know, to find common ground and to see to it that we together, on behalf of ALEC, submit a response that can be challenging. But again, also there, you know, providing response during a public comment period, any individual can do so. You can do it, you know, in your personal capacity. So it's not either one or the other, or only one and not the other. It's you can always, you know, if you feel like you want to do something, do it yourself. So again, I have a draft, been penholder for a number of statements. And but I want to emphasize the fact that you don't have to do it on your own. You know, it's always beneficial to do it together, and you know, use the expertise that is available within your stakeholder group, and also, you know, talk to other stakeholders, other people. How do they look at the topic? Just a couple of challenges, and I think they were touched upon earlier as well. Like for us too, it's mainly volunteer work. So you run into the fact, you know, that there are quite short timelines. Once the public comment period is announced, timelines are short. Topics can be very, very complex, and it can be like overwhelming in terms of, okay, I think I'm interested, but am I knowledgeable enough in order, you know, to be constructive and to make a solid statement. Those are hurdles, you know, that we too run into. But if you pick the right ones, you know, I think you can be effective there, combined with the work that you can do during PDPs and cross community work itself. So I will leave it.
And I think sitting right behind you. Oh. Now, I think what you've said is it's important, actually. You do have that support network. You do have people that have been doing this for years that will help out in some of the things when they have to be written. But don't be scared of being part of the team that picks up the pen and drafts. We need people to draft things. I know there are people who are able to draft really well out there. You might not know so much about the topic, but you'll learn about the topic a lot faster if you were actively involved. And Rafiq, you wanted to say a couple of more words on this. And we have to close very soon, so.
Yeah, so maybe it's two groups, something that we share some issue in how we deal with public comment and we get volunteers. But my experience is that I advise people if you volunteer, even short draft, you don't need to have something complete, finalized. Share it as early as possible, because then you can elicit comments and more input. And that's how we can create that discussion and the consultation. Just waiting till really the end, it makes things more hard to work out or resolve some issues or to finalize. So getting more early so you can create that consultation within the group, and so on. I think that I find it's the most effective way to get comment.
Thank you very much. So we have only a few minutes left, and please bear with us. We used our power as moderators to change the structure a bit. And Adam, I will give the first word to you about opportunities at ICANN, and then it will go to Bruna and to Glenn and Tijani for wrap up and telling about opportunities at NCUC and at large. Adam, the floor is yours, but if you can
You have 10 seconds.
Five.
Adam Peake, ICANN staff. There are really lots of opportunities at ICANN. Thank you very much.
Did you bring some chocolate with you?
No chocolate, and I've left some Dutch waffle biscuits in my room. I'm really sorry. I was just wondering, particularly for the newcomers, I know that because I see fellowship applications, I don't see Next Gen, but I know that many of you know who global stakeholder engagement are because you reference having met my colleagues who are in the regions as they've travelled around, and that gives an idea of what global stakeholder engagement does. We're basically regionally organised, and we go out and we talk about ICANN. We either go out and proactively hold meetings, but more often than not, we respond to requests to come and speak and sort of explain what the ICANN model is and so on and so forth. And it's part of the mission, it's part of the bylaws. You can also find a sort of summary that's quite useful in what are called accountability indicators, and that's a direct link off the homepage. But really, you know, we reflect the five regions, and then we add a few on top, because functionally it's better to be on the usual Europe, Asia Pacific, Latin America, Africa, and somewhere else. Anyway, five. But on top of that, we add Middle East and adjoining countries, the Central and Eastern Europe, the Pacific Islands, and then there's a Caribbean engagement group as well. And the idea is that we're there to sort of talk about the ICANN mission, further the ICANN mission, and engage with you as people who probably haven't heard about ICANN before. So as newcomers, many of you I know have come across us because you put us down in your application form saying, I met somebody and so forth. What we also should be doing is pass on to the next person.
Yes. So chase this guy because he will chase you if you don't hunt him. So would you like, I mean, guys, we have only 4 minutes before the next group starts. So unless this is super necessary, yes.
Two comments then. Some of the regions have strategic plans for engagement that are developed with the community. I'm thinking particularly of Africa, Latin America, Caribbean, and AP region. So if you're interested in that, you can particularly talk to the RALOs, the at-large structures in the region, and get involved with that. You will also see on the agenda that on Monday there's a meeting for the LAC space, the Latin American and Caribbean region space, and that's how you get in developing regional strategies for engagement. And on Wednesday, there's an APAC region space meeting, which again is about how you get involved with developing all this regional strategy and so on. The only other thing to mention is we have someone from the nominating committee here.
Oh, we already have had nominating committee. Sandra was coming here and doing outreach, so in the beginning. So,
okay, sorry, I wasn't.
No, it's okay. Thank you very much. I mean, it's just because we had it already 5 minutes in the beginning with Sandra. So, guys, please come to Nadira and pick the brochures for ALAC. This is what Sandra was talking about in the beginning. Now we have 1 minute for Bruna and 1 minute for Glenn to wrap this up. Yes, 1 minute because the next group is starting in 2 minutes, so we really have to be tough here.
Okay, so hi everyone, my name is Bruna. Real quick, I am the LAC representative at NCUC EC. This will, I'll explain later, I'll pay the $1 for the acronym right now. But real quick, if you heard so many nice explanations and you want to do it, what should you do right now? Join us, come work, help NCUC. We have loads of opportunities. We have a NCUC fellowship program. So we also get to take a member or two to the meetings, and they have mentorship. So this is everything that you heard so far. All of our members who are here, they are willing to help, and they are super experts, spectacular policy makers. So thanks for being here. And if anyone wants any further information, just talk to any of us. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm the Secretariat of Norello. That's one of the five regional at-large organizations, and a number of our members are here. We have the chair right over here from AP RALO. That's Satish Babu. So if you're looking to get involved, we suggest you get involved with your region. So if you're in his region, Asia Pacific, he's the guy to talk to. If you're interested in talking to anyone for North America, there's a number of us. Our chair is right opposite there. And we have a number, Judith, John Laprise, myself, Alfredo, Yobikas. There's a number of us because we're in our region. Urello, there's Olivier, and Lacrello.
Oh, yeah, Bastion.
And also Bastion, obviously. And Lacrello's our other region. This is one way to get involved. It's a very democratic process. You can, there's annual elections. You can run for positions as secretariat or chair or like yourself, ALAC, and we also have a position like Nadira on the NOMCOM. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Then you don't like Afralo.
You know, it turns out that the next group who is going to start is also our group, so I would like to... No, it's not. We are not extending the outreach. We are not giving the floor to Adam with chocolates or to anyone. But I would like to give the floor to Farzan Abadi, the chair of non-commercial stakeholder group who wants to make an announcement.
Hi, everybody. If you are already an NCSG member, we have NCSG out in reach in 10 minutes, which is going to be very exciting. If you want to observe and not an NCSG member but want to know how we work, then you are welcome to join us. We are going to talk about our values and goals and how we are going to respond to board questions and a bunch of other things, includes GDPR too, since you love it.
So, yes, I would like you all to give the applause to our resource people, to our speakers, because I think they did an absolutely amazing job. Thank you all very much.
You too, as well.
And also a big applause to the moderators. Tatiana. a big applause to the moderator, who were perfect. Thank you very much.
Just one last thing. There are some yellow brochures, Naralo brochures, that you can pick up if you want.